Welcome to Green Zine at WFVR-LP, South Royalton. We're going to start off by digging in the dirt with Peter Gabriel and Sheryl Crow. It's 11 o'clock.
Something in me, dark and sticky. All the time it's getting strong. No way of dealing with this feeling. Can't go on like this too long. This time you've gone too far.
We're digging in the dirt, and we always appreciate your support here at Free Vermont Radio, because it's not all free, but we do have a number of underwriters that keep this radio show going in well into its 12th year now of providing both music, entertainment, information, up-to-date cultural items. In fact, we're going to be dealing with some culture and environment here in just a few minutes with our guest from Woodstock, Ben Cogan. Right now, though, let's thank those underwriters, and they include a breakfast and lunch restaurant in Randolph, Vermont, Wit and Grit. Also an entity that's having another event over in Tunbridge, right through the Howe Bridge. Henry knows where the Howe Bridge is and where those twin barns are. The White River Land Collaborative planning another food and art event, and that will be on the last Sunday of August, and it starts at 4 p.m. Once again, that's the White River Land Collaborative. Solar Fest, an environmental and music festival that is located over in Brandon, Vermont. They will relaunch their two-day festival in 2025. The First Branch Coffee Company, I'm maybe heading over there to visit with the Lone Wolf after we go off air. Upper Pass Beer Company, our good friend Chris Perry and company supplying unique farmhouse crafted beers in our area. You can find them often at Carlita's Cantina. Solaflex, the moving solar company, Bale, building a local economy. Find out more information from them at balevt.org. Royal Trail Works with Tom Wells. And finally, a gentleman who is just here with his young daughter, Ruby Daniel Leibowitz. Well, let's check out these microphones. Henry, I think you might be on mic 12.
Let's see
if
I am.
Oh, yeah, you're there.
All right.
Henry, in the studio, this is a rare treat.
Yes,
Did they kick you out of the Queen City, or what happened?
I just had a complicated enough bunch of things I was planning on presenting that I needed to be here in person.
That's good. What are you doing in a couple weeks when I'm going to be absent? You want to come back and do a solo shot?
Probably.
We'll talk about that later. Well, good to have you here, and we'll introduce our guests in just a moment. So what's on the docket today, Henry?
Well, I attended the 350 Vermont rally on Saturday, and their theme is Don't Burn Our Future.
Mm-hmm.
And we were at a little brick building down on the waterfront that actually is hiding a oil-fired peaker plant, a plant that generates electricity.
Yes.
And 10 to 20% of our electric bill goes to pay for maintaining those peaker plants. And if that same money were to go for battery storage, we would be out of generating electricity with fossil fuel.
Really? That big a difference?
Yes.
Wow. So. And where was this peaker plant located in?
So it's on Penny Land Lane. It is it's over by the marina on the Burlington waterfront.
Okay.
And I have some recordings of people explaining about that, and also something on what's happening with wood pellets, and we'll get into environmentally how, if we could increase our green cover, we would actually have cooling that would offset all of the current greenhouse gas heating that's doing.
So you're bringing us some good news.
I am.
Yeah.
And you know, this rally pointed out that there was a coal-fired power plant, and the public pushed back against that.
Yes,
and
the one over in Bow.
One in Burlington.
So it was coal power.
It was the lost it, but it's now just a steel framework of a building, and they're going to do something in the way of making it a public space.
Is that the McNeil plant? McNeil, where they're burning wood.
That's wood chip.
McNeil. Yeah, yes. That's wood chip. Okay, yeah. But anyway,
that's still on the agenda to get rid of that too. But
yes,
that's down the road a little bit because there's Burlington Electric. That's its major source of electricity at the moment.
Yes, and it does count as renewable. And that's a whole different discussion.
Yeah, well, it's part of this discussion.
Okay,
that's the pellets in Europe. They've determined that they are renewable.
Uh-huh.
And so they consider them totally green energy when they are not.
When they are not, right. I guess I brought up Bow because that was over New Hampshire and very controversial. We talked to some folks that were protesting there, and I think they finally succeeded. I believe that that plant is being mothballed.
Yeah.
And just real quick for new, what does a peaker plant do?
So a peaker plant generates the electricity when there isn't enough generation
right.
on the grid or enough transportation of electricity from other places to meet the peak needs. Mm-hmm. And electricity gets very expensive.
During those peak usage times.
Peak usage. And it may only be parts of 5 days a year or something. But they pay the utilities a lot of money to keep these peaker plants available.
Yeah.
And so they probably aren't burning an enormous amount of fossil fuel, but they might make up 15% or 20% of the New England grid.
Yeah, you know what occurs to me in this political year? We just had the primary elections here. I think this is a bipartisan issue. If you said, hey, if we could get rid of a peaker plant like that and end up saving everybody, no matter what your party is, progressive, independent, Republican, Democrat, 15, 20% off of your monthly electric bill, I think people could get behind that. That number too high?
That's how much we're spending on them.
Oh, out of the overall.
But if you were to buy all the battery storage to make it so you could get rid of the peaker plant, then a piece of that will still be in the cost.
Still
but it's just
cost.
Crazy that we...
Yeah.
That we spend that much money on something that isn't really used.
But it would at least take off some of those unpaid externalities that damage the environment in the future.
Absolutely.
That are not being taken care of now by the fossil fuel industry.
Right.
Okay. Wow. All right. A lot to get into there. Anything else before we go to Bird Note? Let's go to Bird Note. Okay. And why did you pick this one out? The August molt. Well, that might be part of the reason it's August.
And because I'm seeing birds that look sort of scruffy.
Okay. They're looking sort of scruffy. Well, let's see if I can get this page to stay on the screen. And I'm going to hit this, and I think we're going to have Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. A day of watching birds is nearly always a day of surprises, and an August day brings surprises unique to the season. You can see some songbirds in patchy, almost unrecognizable plumage, as if they were going incognito. you can see songbirds with gaps in their wings, entire feathers gone missing, and most jarring, the occasional bird with absolutely no tail. What's going on? Well, many birds, which by August have just finished the intense rigors of nesting and raising young, now undergo a complete molt. Molt is a cyclic process of feather growth. As new feathers begin to grow in, they push the old ones out. In the next few weeks, some birds will replace all of their feathers. Why do birds molt? Because feathers wear out. Songbirds, like the scarlet tanager and hooded warbler we've been hearing, birds that migrate long distances need to complete this process on a tight schedule. They need to be ready before it's time to strike out for Central America in September. So, sometimes all the tail feathers fall out at once, leaving a bird for a few weeks looking rather ungainly. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann. BirdNote's newsletter delivers the wonder and joy of birds directly to your inbox. Sign up at birdnote.org to get a weekly preview of our shows, stories, photos, and more.
All right, another issue of BirdNote. Fascinating, Henry.
Yeah, well, I was seeing these birds on our bird feeder that were really looking kind of henpecked.
Oh, okay.
And I thought maybe it was young birds that had fledglings, but I think what I was seeing was mom and dad who were totally worn out and going through their molt.
Yeah.
So
huh.
That's what triggered my putting that up there. And Jane had a my partner Jane had a rock dove that had gotten stuck somewhere, and she was unsticking it, and it tried to get away from her, and as it escaped her grasp, she came away with all of its tail feathers.
Oh no!
And it was probably getting ready to molt, but that bird really couldn't fly hardly at all, and we found some place that would keep it safe and fed until its tail feathers grew back in.
Oh, that's a sweet story, Henry.
Yeah.
So, I know we have a lot to get into. We do have Ben Kogan with us from Imagine Zero, and I fortunately was asked to be involved with Imagine Zero, I guess it was last May, and Ben and his partner Cliff and a whole bunch of other people are doing it again, and I'm going to bring up your mic, Ben. We're going to welcome you here and have you introduce yourself and tell us what you're up to. Go ahead and speak some more.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Oh, yeah, we got you.
That's all that training, that music training I have.
Yeah, right, because Ben is a great local musician who is still hosting. Last time I saw you, Ben, was down at that open mic down in, what's that place called down there? The Ottaquechee Yacht Club.
Yes.
Down at the Yacht Club.
Yeah, down at the club. I saw you at the club.
Yeah, down. Very exclusive down there. And Ben puts on a great open mic. So, Imagine Zero back and at a new location. Tell us a little bit about what's happening, and then let's dig into the sustainability element of it.
Great. Well, first, thanks for having me on the show. I love talking about the festival and the sustainability aspect. So, thanks for having me, Todd.
Certainly.
Okay, it's called the Imagine Zero Music Festival. It's an aspiring zero waste and zero carbon emissions music festival. It's happening Saturday, September 7th at Fable Farm. A lot of people around here know that as the site of Feast and Field, the Thursday night jam that happens during the summer months here.
Yep.
And yeah, we got a great show coming up. It's an all-day festival. It's 11, doors open at 11 and it goes till 9 p.m.
Only 9?
Only 9. Well, I mean, if you want to host the after party, we can talk about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was looking up the web, and maybe it wasn't on the website, but there was a link somewhere that actually said it went till 5, and I went, that's not right. So if I find that, I'll let you know about it and correct it, but yeah.
5 p.m. or 5 a.m.?
Oh, yeah, 5 a.m. No 5 a.m. for me. And let's just stick with the music a little bit. I am familiar with a lot of the artists that you're going to have. In fact, I played a couple of them this morning, most notably Laku Mijic is going to be there. I think they're probably playing one of the later sets of the day.
Yeah, they're headlining the show.
They are headlining. I was going to say I've had a chance to see them both locally at the original location of Feast and Field, and then they were invited to play down at the what is it called down there in Greenfield, Vermont? Anyway, the festival that's held down there, Green River Festival. Yeah, Green River Festival. And they are great. I notice also, in fact, someone who might come in and play some music with us, Jacob Breitbach and his wife, Bea Charmer, are going to be there. Saints and Liars, who I managed to see at a festival that was also sort of pitched, not to the degree that Imagine Zero of being kind of a more environmentally friendly festival, and that was called Winter Wondergrass that happened down at Stratton Ski Area back in 2000.
Heard about it. A friend of mine, I think, was working on some of those sustainability initiatives.
Yeah, it was good. Unfortunately, Marina. Yeah, they haven't come back to Vermont since. So, great lineup. So, what initiated the change? Because you did have this festival. Was it last May of 2023?
Yeah, it was May 13th, 2023.
Okay. Right, and you were over in Brandon, Vermont, the site of Solarfest, so that made sense why you might have been interested. Of course, it was a bit of a drive for you organizers who are based in Woodstock, but what precipitated the transition and the renewal of the festival here in Barnard?
Well, the first thing is, like, when we first decided to do this last year was our first year, and we were like, well, let's put on a music festival that has, to give some background, there's this thing called Musicians for Sustainability, which is a program I started to have musicians push for sustainability in the music industry. I'm a musician myself, been a musician for 20 years, you know, plus dating myself a little. But I always thought musicians care about the environment. They want to do something, but they don't know how. They feel alone. They feel like, how can I make a change? Like, and they also are worried about venues, like, you know, giving them a hard time about requesting certain things. So I think that there's power in numbers, and the basic idea of Musicians for Sustainability is that they ask venues to do 3 out of 6 sustainable solutions. And so those are, drum roll please.
Yep.
Renewable energy, composting, incentivizing low carbon travel, using only kegs, water refill stations, and reusable foodware like plates and whatnot. And so when we were trying to find a venue last year, we drew like a circle with 60, like within 60 minutes of where we live in Woodstock, can we find a venue that's powered by solar? That was like the first step. And so we went from, you know, an option of, I don't know, 40 or 50 venues to host this music festival to 2. And one of those was in New Hampshire called Tupelo Music Hall. Maybe it's in Tupelo, New Hampshire.
No, there is a Tupelo Music Hall down in Londonderry, New Hampshire.
Yeah, okay, that's the one.
I've been there.
So Revision Energy was actually a sponsor this year, which is pretty cool.
Oh, really? You got them on board.
Yes.
Nice.
They're great. They've expanded to this area, so... they did the solar for that venue. They also did the solar for in Portland. What's it called? Thompson's Point. They
yes,
did like
Thomas Point.
Okay.
Yep.
Over in Portland. And so so Derry was one of that. Tupelo Music Hall was one venue, and the other venue was Solar Fest. And so that's why we chose Solar Fest, is because it was an available venue that had solar. And they also, like, they're a great organization. They've put on concerts before. They seem like a great place to partner. But we picked Barnard this year for 2 reasons. Number one, it's a little closer for people that live around here. Our network is around here. And so I think we thought it'd be easier to get people to come out to that, and for site visits and stuff like that. It made it a little bit easier, but also Solarfest wasn't available this year. So there's a few things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, having it close. So to go back to one of those, I think you said there were six points, and you hit a lot of them at your first year.
Yeah.
You had that company. You hit all of them.
Yeah.
The guy that brought the not recyclable, but the cups and stuff that just ended up being washed and taken back and used somewhere else.
Yeah, the Cup Zero, they do reusable cups.
And then when you went over, some people might have thought they heard the word kegs in there, and they did hear the word kegs.
That's correct.
That's right. There are no cans and bottles of sodas and beers and stuff. It's all distributed in those returnable cups.
Yes. So the whole process is circular,
yeah,
which is like, I think, the best part about it. If you couple kegs with reusable cups, like, if you, it, I'll, I should we're on the radio, so you can't, I'll have to just describe it, is that there's this video I put together of what it looked like at the end of the festival. And if you imagine like a, what's called like a tote, like a rolling, can you guys imagine a rolling trash bin? Like you, like it's like up to your chest and then like you roll it out. So we, for total trash for the event, we had about a third of that was filled up with trash, and that's it for 650 people.
Whoa. Right.
Yeah. That was it. Right. Talk about leave, so, sort of like hikers and stuff, leave no trace.
Totally.
You come in, you've got a lot of people in one place, you are consuming things, et cetera, but you're either not using disposable things or you're taking it with you. And, yeah, of course, it. So just to go back to the musician sustainability group, yeah, that you founded, are you getting much traction with other bands and around,
yeah,
the region?
Yeah, actually, okay, two bands that you may have heard of. One is called Rubble Bucket. If you've heard of them, they signed the pledge and we're announcing it in a couple weeks. And then also this band called Sammy Ray and the Friends, who they're probably the biggest act that we've got, and they signed the agreement like a couple weeks ago and we're announcing in 2 weeks. So yeah, bands are starting to push for these things at venues, and it's pretty exciting.
That is pretty,
wow,
exciting, huh?
Yeah, because the whole not music scene, but the whole big get-together things are just full of trash.
Totally,
so,
yeah.
It's just, that's just so opposite. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. There's lots of waste when you're doing like a gathering. And so like if it, with some like thought ahead of time and designing it in a way that there's no waste, it can totally be done. It's not, yeah, it's not impossible. Yeah, I mean, like every level, it's actually kind of easier at the bigger levels, I think. Like, I just like, sometimes like there's community gatherings, like a pizza party at, you know, a backyard. Like, yeah, there's waste that goes along with that.
Pizza boxes.
Yeah, pizza boxes. Those aren't the worst, like, because like they can be recycled or composted. They're usually like not bleached and like they're, it's okay to compost them. But like, you know, just disposable plates. Like, you know, if we start using reusable plates, like, you know, just people. We've kind of come to this culture of disposability where it's just people think it's easier, or it is easier to use disposables as opposed to using reusables. So there just has to be a system in place and commit to it, and it can totally be done.
The Buddhist monks that travel from place to place carry their own spoon and wood bowl with them.
Uh-huh.
They have almost nothing on board. They're, you know, maybe one change of clothing, kind of what they can put over their shoulder. But they've got a nice bowl and spoon.
Yeah, I think that's, I like that minimalist attitude.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and great site. And just to go back to, I think, generating more local interest by coming back to this side of the mountain. And Solarfest will be back next year doing their thing, and they, I think they're going to have a camping element. Is that, you know, getting the word out to people at a place where people are used to going to for music on Thursday nights. I was playing a band that's going to be there tonight. I think they were like the Afro-Semitic Brass Band, something like that.
Whoa.
And there's some more African music there next week. And of course, people might not know that Laku Mijik also is an international band originally from Haiti.
That's right.
So having these unique opportunities to see music nearby, you can get to the site of Fable Farm in, if you take a bike. Hey, are you promoting people arriving on bikes, by the way?
Yeah, the bike one's an interesting one.
I might come out on my bike.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I would love for people to ride bikes, but just thinking about people coming home, if they're staying till like 9, like...
And hitting dark, the keg, yeah.
Hitting those kegs pretty hard.
That could be a little rough on the back.
Yeah, there's no camping. It's like, so definitely we wanted to have camping, but it wasn't like a priority, but... If there was camping, we could definitely promote bikes more. But yeah, there is like a sort of safety factor about people getting drunk and riding back home, yeah, at nighttime.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you're used to that.
Know. Might be safer on a bike than in a car.
Maybe. So I don't know. Horses are totally okay.
There we go.
Well, if someone has a horse that they want to bring there, we'll make sure we give them whatever they
need.
Or
maybe
to park
a favorite milk cow that rides.
Yeah, I haven't seen that, but that would be a sight to see.
Well, it is a rural area. Actually, I think Barnard, the town itself, prides itself as far as being a town that is generally far away from major roads of any town in the state of Vermont. You've got Route 12 there going by Silver Lake. That would be the closest sort of paved road.
It's where EC Fiber was their first test town for that, and it was because it was just so unconnected from anything.
Right, right. It made sense to go there, yeah. Huh. Yeah. Well, it sounds like a great lineup. Any other tweaks that are being made on the sustainable front that didn't really exist, or maybe just a little bit of a different way of doing things from the first Imagine Zero, Ben?
So Fable Farm is this, if you guys are listening that you don't know about it, they're a great farm, and most, if not all, the food is on the farm. Like, so they make this apple wine that's really good. Those are from apples grown on site. And then the meat is from cows that are, like, you can see them. Like, it's pretty cool that you can see, it's all, like, very tangible.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're doing the composting, because they need the compost for their farm. And then also they're doing all the reusable plates. And so instead of having to import them, they're getting them, and we're helping them, helping get some of those. There's a train in the background. I don't know if you guys can hear it.
I always leave that up there. Well, as we talked last year before Imagine Zero, there was one of the musicians in one of your headliner bands that was going to try to take the train from California,
right,
to be part of that lessening the emissions. And I know that that part didn't work out, but yeah.
We were trying to get Dawes, the drummer from Dawes, to take the train from California to Vermont. And there's like a couple routes. Like, you take it to Chicago from LA,
yep,
then you transfer in Chicago, and then you take, I think it's called the Empire Line or something like that. You take that to Albany, and I think I was going to try to pick them up in Albany, but that part didn't pan out. But we are working. So this is kind of an interesting thing, is that so I got this chart over here, right? And so if you look at tell me if we're, time wise.
No, I'm going to get back into the train thing. So, but yeah, keep going.
Okay, cool. So it's trying to be zero waste and zero carbon emissions. So if we want to do that, like, what we need to do is figure out where are the emissions coming from, and where is the waste coming from, and how do we tackle that? And so the audience travel is 33% of the emissions of a music festival.
Yeah.
And so the way we're trying to tackle that is we're trying to encourage fans to carpool, right? You know, the more people you get per car, the less amount of emissions. So if it's a car is, 5 tons of carbon, just using that for example, if one person uses it, that's 5 tons, but 4 people use it, well, that's not an easy number. Let's just say it's 4 tons, 4 tons of carbon. Then if you split it over 4 people, it's 1 ton of carbon per person. And so it reduces it exponentially. And so we're trying to get people to carpool by having a raffle. So whoever carpools 3 or more to a car gets entered into a raffle. I'm working on some more raffle prizes this week, but to just get us started, is there going to be a free bike excursion from Vermont Bike and Brew?
Oh, I know that fella, yeah.
Jonas.
Yeah,
he's
Jonas.
Great. And so he offered that. Hopefully he remembers. I'll remind him. Yeah, I saw him.
I know Jonas. I take your point.
Yeah. I teach guitar. I teach music lessons, so I can give a free guitar, bass, or piano lesson with me. Ben Kogan. Fable Farm is offering 4 or 5 bottles of wine for people that carpool. Free tickets to next year's event. 2 nights. The other one is 2 nights at any one of the Ohana Inn locations. There's one in Trenton, Maine, near Arcadia. I've stayed there. Stonington, Maine, Woodstock, Vermont, and Manchester, Vermont. And we're working on getting more. And then also, on top of this, we're offering a shuttle bus coming from downtown Woodstock that people can just hop on the bus and take that to the events. We're also trying to get them to be an e-bus, but I'm hitting up some complications because the e-bus is technically only supposed to be used for, it's with the high school. So Butler Bus.
Yeah. Oh, they have one down there.
So if you guys know any, have some friends in high places to help us figure this out, they have a grant, but I think the grant, and I need to get my eyes on it, is exclusively for school transportation. It can't be used for
other
things.
To have some school kids in there. That's the answer.
Yeah, or have them run it. I think either one of those, hopefully that satisfies.
I think the school will be open by then. So to have a field trip so that it's open to the kids, but it's taking other members of the public, that guy, get in touch with Charlie Kimball I would suggest Charlie Kimball, who I believed it may have just, I don't know what happened in the primaries the other day. I was out of town, but I know he was running to be part of the legislature, but he is a major mover and shaker down there.
Someone like that could help bless this thing and make it happen.
That sounds good. Hey, do you still have room for some other raffle prizes?
Yeah, we do.
Okay,
have room.
Write this down. I'm willing to offer a pair of tickets to a rather unique concert that is coming up a week after that event. That is September 14th, Canadian blues man Harry Manx. A pair of tickets to that show. Harry Manx. Last name is M-A-N-X. It's a it's a concert that my little group, Mountain Folk, is putting on. If we had enough people come, any extra money after all expenses are paid will be a benefit to the radio station. But I think I could spare a couple of tickets for people that are trying to lessen their carbon impact.
I feel like a bookie here. I got all these tickets.
He's running the number.
These names and numbers, I got to shake them down.
You know our rules guy, Bob D, could be listening right now. I think he'll vet this. I think it's okay so far. Yeah, that's good. We're not selling too much, and plus your group, actually, are you officially a nonprofit? And if you guys set up that way, or maybe that's in the future?
That's in the future. We're not, because there's just a lot of paperwork, but we're open to it. There was this great grant that we couldn't apply for from the Vermont Department of Tourism. I'm learning that the Vermont Department of Tourism is really strong here, and it'd be great to have their support. So,
yeah, I know when you apply to the IRS for a 501c3, because we went through this as a radio station way long ago, is that sort of a bridging aspect is you can have a partner existing 501c3 associated with you until you get your official, in other words, kind of an umbrella organization. So we could talk about that later if you get to that phase. So this is, once again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Ben Cogan, co-founder with, I can't remember Cliff's last name, but
Johnson.
Cliff Johnson of the Imagine Zero Music Festival, which happened in Brandon last year and is happening this year up at the site of Fable Farm right off of the Royalton Turnpike. And the date is September 7th. Gates open, did you say, at 11 a.m., Ben?
Yeah, gates open at 11.
And then music just right on through the day. I think you've got at least six or seven artists on the bill.
Eight or nine. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, 9.
And are you going to jump in with one of those bands?
I am, yeah. Actually, I don't know if it might be 2 or 3 bands.
Yeah.
So I play with my own band, the Ben Cogan Band, and Cliff and I are going to have a talk in the middle, sort of telling everyone about what's happening here and all the sustainability things, a lot of what we covered today on the show.
Yeah.
I coach a kids band, and they're called Path of Totality. And
I saw
first.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're playing at 11:30, and it's four kids. Some of them I'm actually hoping will come and do the show here, because some of them live in South Royalton.
Yeah, and I think they've done a gig up at the Underground in Randolph. I saw their name. Do you know Vincent Freeman up there? Great sound man in Randolph. I'm pretty sure he's had them on a Friday night series.
It's possible. We definitely just played at Crossroads like a month or two
ago.
Okay,
the Path of Totality. We're all looking for that. It's just it's kind of hard to find sometimes. Wow. So great lineup. Henry, you're going to be free to be there on September 7th?
I don't know.
Yeah. You're going to be collaring some legislator about another building.
Bring him in. Tell him to come. He can, grease the wheels at the Imagine Zero Music Festival.
Right. Okay.
Oh, that's great.
Well, that is great.
And yeah.
It's would you have you got that list of things that you are avoiding? What's making it zero? Just run through that list
six,
again.
That list of six. I like that.
Sure. Yeah. So the list of six. It's what we're trying to. It's avoiding and encouraging. So renewable energy. So that's happening from a solar trailer on site. So we're actually renting that from Solarfest, the same trailer we used last year.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah, we tie them in. Michael Bailey is going to be there.
Is John Blittersdorf going to be helping with that?
I don't know if he's going to be there.
Because I know he was keeping a pretty close eye on it the last time. Okay.
So all the stage is all plugged into the solar trailer. And then we have grid backup power if and when we run out of, when it gets dark and if the batteries are low, then we're going to switch over to grid power.
Yeah.
They'll keep track, though, of those extra carbon.
Candlelight. If you can find a way to use candlelights to power the stage.
Yeah, that would really be an innovation there. All right.
Or if someone, you know, has some innovative way to figure this out and make it smooth, you know, talk to me. I'm open. I'm happy to talk. So yeah, everything's powered into the stage. That's like number one, is trying to get renewable energy at like at festivals or, you know, at music venues. The reusable cups and plates, those are being satisfied because that's what they have on site. For some of it, we had to talk to them about adding, they're using some like single use paper food boats. And so now they're getting reusables for that instead. And for their water cups, they're using compostable cups, which are okay, but they're still single use. So now they're buying reusable cups. What else? So that was there. All the wine and beer is keg only.
Right.
So there's no cans there. And if you see a bottle that they're using, the wine that they make, they reuse those on site.
Yes,
so they take them back and they reuse them there. They have composting bins already. We're incentivizing low carbon travel by the things we talked about before, the raffle. We're having the shuttle bus, and then also we're telling people where the EV charging stations are. I can just tell you now, as I have them right here off the top of my head, there's nothing too close to the venue, but there's one in White River Junction. There's a charge point there right at the gas station, at the mobile gas station. That's a fast charger. There's two at the Woodstock Inn, two level two Tesla chargers. That's 20 minutes from the venue. There are two level two chargers at East End Park. There's a DC fast charger that doesn't work in Queechee Village. So if anyone listening wants to work on that,
yeah,
that thing drives me crazy. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do know that one. It's got both the CHAdeMO and the CCS there.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
that one.
I got to work.
No, I went there
ago.
Once. That was, I said, forget about it.
Yeah, it's really irritating.
But I keep going because I have a couple more I may add on.
Oh, that would be great. So there's a, but the Queechee does have two J1772, like the regular chargers.
Yep.
That's 30 minutes from the venue. There's one in Bethel, which is works very well. It's the flow charging. You got to use the
app. That's
the
one I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of them, it's just easier with the app, which
is frustrating. The charge point does work with the flow. They've got some agreement there between those two companies. Yep.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yep.
So in Bethel, which is about 18 minutes from the venue, they have one DC fast charger and two charge points. There's one right here. I'm looking at it right over here. The Vermont Law School has four level two J1772 chargers.
Right.
Did I miss anything?
No, I think you caught the ones that I'm aware of. Rochester's kind of too far away, but just in general, there is another flow charger similar to the one in Bethel that's over in Rochester. But we do have some people streaming from Rochester. Hey, one other thing, just a suggestion, and the radio station is involved with obviously having you on here, but also we will be there. Okay, if we might bring a pop-up or something for the radio station, does that work?
Yeah, sure.
And do you have what other vendors or other sort of information groups that might be there? I know last time you had Vermont 350 had a representative.
Yes.
You have some of that going on?
Yes, we do. This time around, we have, I have it somewhere around here. So they're kind of just calling them all sponsors. And so Vision Energy is a sponsor.
Yep.
They're going to have a tent and talking about it. Sleep Woodstock is a sponsor. They're the presenting sponsor of the event. Efficiency Vermont's going to be there, which I'm like really stoked that they're going to be there because I'm a big fan of them. Norwich Solar is going to be there.
Yep, we know those folks.
Go Vermont, which is the Vermont Agency of Transportation, they're going to be there and have a tent, and I'm really excited to work with them. We have a meeting next week. Hopefully we can get this, unlock these e-buses. That would be really
Yeah, great. They would be good people to talk to. And I think they're also involved with trying to get some lower income folks to be able to afford to get a used EV, et cetera. Mm. I think they'll have information about that there.
Muscoma Bank is a sponsor. Barnarts, Sustainable Woodstock, and Pentangle Arts.
That's a great list. Hey, one last suggestion. Maybe you guys are already planning on it. So people are coming in their EVs. They're let's say they are riding their bikes, they live locally. How about having a sort of separate cordoned off parking area so that people that are arriving can see all of these EVs in one place? And people riding their bikes. It could be kind of, I know that whole parking setup, it could be one of those first bays or whatever, but I think that's a good display. Solar Fest did that. If people walk by, they might even have a conversation with the owner of a, you know, a VW ID Buzz, or actually they will not be there, that particular vehicle. Next year, people arriving in the VW ID Buzz carries 7 passengers, all EV, coming to the U.S. this fall.
Okay.
So we'll work on, maybe we can get a VW to provide us with one of those.
I would love VW to sponsor the event, or just any
okay.
car company.
All right.
We've been working on it.
I'm in touch with them. I'll see what I come up with.
Various degrees of success.
Yeah, right. But there's a lot going on. How many volunteers are you expecting to need for this event?
Oh, we need volunteers. That's a big one.
Okay.
We had a meeting last night. So, if anyone has a...
Yeah, how would they connect with you? As far as, I want to be a volunteer, maybe they're going to get a little break on their ticket or whatever.
If you're a volunteer, you get a free ticket.
Okay,
that's
a pretty good incentive.
On the website, there's a contact on there. So
okay.
The website is imaginezerofestival.com.
Pretty easy.
Say it again. Imagine Zero, that's the festival name, imaginezerofestival.com. And there's a contact on there if you would like to be a volunteer. We're definitely looking.
Okay, we'll spread the word. Ben Cogan up from Woodstock, not just a musician. In fact, basically, you're more a professional environmentalist with a side gig as a musician.
Depending on which day it is.
Well, today you're definitely on the sustainability front, and we particularly appreciate you coming by, and I'm sure I'll be in touch with you about some other things between now and September 7th out at Fable Farm. It's going to be great.
Get your tickets now.
Yeah. All right.
Excellent.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
All right. We're going to roll on.
Boy, there's the making of sausage right in front of you.
Yeah. Why not? It's live radio. None of this was scripted, but we might know a little bit about what we're talking about. So, Henry, you're opening up your laptop because I think you maybe brought a couple of audio clips to remind folks.
I'm going to give you a few audio clips.
Okay.
So this Vermont 350 event in Burlington, and there was another one in Ascutney, and another one in a third place, maybe Manchester, which are where all the peaker plants are in the state of Vermont. I was at the Burlington one, and 350 across the country has done this in many, many other communities. So this is not just a Vermont issue. It's a problem, really, with the delivery of electricity. And here is Connor, who has been an organizer for 350 Vermont, and who is actually leaving that position. This was his very last activity, and he's going off to massage school. And then when he gets through with that, he'll come back to probably doing other environmental things,
right,
because he's very admired. But here's his quick take on it.
By Burlington Electric Department. And we're highlighting the peaker plant as a symbol of the outdated fossil fuel infrastructure that we desperately need to move away from to preserve our futures and our present. This Penny Lane peaker plant has received over $14 million in the last decade in ratepayer subsidies. That's money that is taken from you and my utility bill. And it is slated to stay open for the foreseeable future. It's unacceptable. It's disingenuous for our utilities across Vermont to be advertising themselves as a green and renewable company when they're holding on to fossil fuel infrastructure and lobbying behind the scenes in the State House for polluting fuels like biomass and biofuels to be considered as renewable. And I think that's really the work in front of us as Vermonters who are concerned about our climate and our futures, to be pushing our utilities and working together with them for a truly clean and truly renewable future.
All right. Good words from Connor there, Henry.
There's some words from Connor. And we had a UVM student who wrote a music piece for, whoopsies. And we'll listen to that. Maybe.
Yeah, I can sort of hear something in the background there.
Yeah, I think I got to take my case off my phone that it's coming out of.
The wonders of live radio. Hey, while Henry's getting that ready,
here.
Oh, okay. It is ready.
I'm theoretically up. Well, I guess we're not going to hear that clip.
You know what? We are going to hear a little bit of music before we move into the next phase, because I do have something queued up. And I'm going to bring you up just for another moment. Ben, remind me of the organization that you founded for musicians to get on board the sustainability group.
Sure. It's called musiciansforsustainability.com.
Okay. And I believe you said the first group, Musicians for Sustainability, is Rubble Bucket. They're all signed up, right?
Yeah, they are signed up.
So
yeah.
Why don't we hear some Rubble Bucket here?
I love Rubble Bucket.
Stella the Begonia on Green Scene. Aboard Rubble Bucket to Musicians for Sustainability. We're going to bring that down in the mix. And if you're looking for that one because you want to hear it in its entirety, the name of the album, actually, that is the title cut from the plant-based album. Maybe they didn't use any fossil fuels in making that record. Stella the Begonia. Henry is going to be back with us now. I'm turning his introduce this next segment you have for us, Henry.
Yeah. So the going back to our theme on burning, whenever you burn to make energy, you're putting carbon in the atmosphere, and CO2 takes hundreds and even multiple hundreds of years to come back out of the atmosphere. And one of the ways of getting it back out of the atmosphere is to be growing things. and they will pull the carbon. Trees, green plants, photosynthesis will pull that carbon out and will put it in the soil. And it, over the years, gets stored in a more and more locked up way. And that green cover has the advantage of also cooling immediately, because it takes heat at ground level, transports it up to ground to cloud level, and then goes out to space. And we need to be cooling, and cutting down trees and making pellets out of them isn't such a good deal, especially if you're clear cutting. The trees do grow back, but it's a 20 or 30 year cycle, and we sort of need to be cooling now. So here's a piece from Volts. I'm just going to play the first 4 minutes of this, that's talking about wood pellets. And it wood pellets for electricity generation is very inefficient, because that process doesn't use the majority of the energy. It's less than 50% efficient. A wood pellet stove in your house at least is operating around 80% efficient. So don't worry about burning wood pellets in your house, but it's better than fossil fuel. But let's not make electricity with it. So here's Volts.
Hello, everyone. This is Volts for July 24th, 2024. What's up with burning wood pellets for energy? I'm your host, David Roberts. Not a lot of people are aware of this, but over half of what counts as renewable energy in the European Union is bioenergy, i.e. wood pellets burned for heat or electricity. And B, most of those wood pellets come from North American forests, especially in the southeastern U.S. and western Canada. Now the industry is pushing to open new wood pellet facilities in the Pacific Northwest, manufacturing and exporting pellets made from Pacific Northwest wood to the EU and increasingly Asia. Climate and forest activists are pushing back. They say the carbon math on wood pellets doesn't add up. Poor communities suffer the emissions generated by wood burning, and the industry uses more wood from natural forests than it lets on. To get into the details of this faux climate solution, I am talking to Rita Frost of NRDC, who has been involved in conflicts over wood pellets for a decade, and Brenna Bell of 350 PDX, a forest activist. We're going to discuss who makes wood pellets, who uses them, what kinds of emissions they produce, and where they want to expand. All right then, with no further ado, Rita Frost of NRDC and Brenna Bell of 350 PDX, welcome to Volts. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
I think I first started thinking I should do something on wood pellets back when I was at Grist, like 10 years ago, and have been steadily procrastinating on it literally ever since. So this is 10 years of procrastination finally at an end. Rita, I want to start with you. For listeners who are like me and have not paid a ton of attention to this as it has kind of developed in the corner of our eye, maybe just start with telling us, what are wood pellets? How do they make them? And what are they used for?
Utility wood pellets, which commonly they're referred to as wood pellets, even just biomass sometimes, they're a densified biomass fuel that can generate electricity or heating when they're burned, sometimes both. They're small, they're consistent in size, they're wood-derived compressed cylinders.
Mm-hmm.
They look, kind of look like rabbit food. production, consumption, trade of wood pellets has really grown substantially since the late 2000s, firmly coming onto the scene in the United States in about the past 10 years, all following new policy in the European Union. It was in response to those policies in the past decade that wood pellet production in the U.S. has since grown 500%. The demand is coming from foreign industrial power plants where wood pellets are frequently used for co-firing with or replacement of coal. In other words, I am not focusing on wood pellets used to heat domestic wood stoves in Vermont. They're very cozy, but what we're focusing on here is wood pellet production meant for export markets where they're used in electricity setting. Just to illustrate that point a little bit more finely, let me transport the listener to the north of England, where you will find what used to be the world's largest coal burner called Drax. Now, today, they are the number one burner of forest-derived wood pellets. Drax is huge. They have a generating capacity of nearly 4,000 megawatts. It's the country's largest utility and also regularly joins the top ranks as far as carbon emissions in the country. But that's in England, so what does it have to do with us over here in the United States? Well, it's because back on the home front, the U.S. has become ground zero for wood pellet production. It's driven by European and British policy, but hey, who has a lot of forests? We do in the United States.
So when you say driven by their policy, I assume that just means they have deemed this renewable, and so this is now falling under demand for renewable energy, basically.
Yes, you're hitting the nail on the head. It's from a renewable energy directive. It was first indoctrinated in 2009 for the 2020 period. It has since been re-upped for the 2030 period. And the drivers are all about trying to address climate change.
Yeah.
You know, it's about assessing carbon emissions, but biomass burning wood pellets has been politically designated as having the emissions of zero, and they are provided financial support.
Yeah, we'll get into.
All right, so that's what happens when politics gets in there and designates things as having emissions of zero when they're not, and Vermont's doing that with their peaker plants, and Vermont is doing that with Hydro-Québec, and the Burlington Electric plant is doing it with their McNeil chip-fired power plant, and even our many high schools, including Tunbridge Elementary School, is now heated with wood chips, and it really isn't all that sustainable. Yes, better than fossil fuel, but not all the way to solar and heat pumps and things
like that. But on the subject of burning, and they're making a good effort, I should point this out. And once again, the Herald of Randolph is a media underwriter for this radio station. The current issue just came out this morning, front of the page, bottom of the fold. Vermont Castings, of course, well-known company making great wood stoves for many, many years. They make a green push. A pretty significant article. Just read what the plant manager says. They've been using LED lighting. He says the two big things they've made improvement is in their handling of sand, reusing sand, and also reusing the slag that comes out of making the wood stove. So, interesting article, once again, in today's Herald. Underneath, you mentioned the address Penny Lane, Henry. You might remember.
Yeah.
Do you know who did this originally? Can you name this band?
Yeah, well, originally it was the Beatles.
All right. I didn't stump you this time.
No.
Sometimes I stump them, Ben.
Most of the time.
It was early enough in your radio career that you got that. Hey, I'm just going to run through the underwriting credits, and then we might have time to tell you just a little bit more information. We're down to a minute and a half. You've been listening to Green Zine on your radio station, WFVRLP, South Royalton, indeed, radio of the people, by the people, and for the people. Green Zine brought to you today, as usual, by Soliflect, Bale, Royal Trailworks, Daniel Leibowitz, who was just in the studio about an hour ago, and I might be visiting with him a little bit more, This afternoon, Upper Pass Beer Company, First Branch Coffee Company, Solar Fest, the White River Land Collaborative, and Wit and Grit. Once again, I want to thank Ben Kogan for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And Henry, we got a minute. Any other little tags you want to let folks know about out there?
Yeah, I'm in hopes that next week we'll swing back to agriculture, because I think that soils and agriculture are really the things that are going to fix our human health and the climate. At the same time, it's a win-win at least, and maybe a triple win. And I'm going to see if Dee Dee Pursehouse is available.
We haven't had Dee Dee on in a while.
We'll have her back on if she's available. Her schedule is quite busy, so she doesn't know until the last minute.
Well, we'll look forward to having you all join us next week, and let the Beatles finish it up here. Thanks, Henry.
Thank you.